Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson. I am joined as always by the man who everyone keeps waiting to see if he's going to get ruled out for the rest of the season or not, but he's still standing. It's Kevin Zimmerman.
No joke, my foot's messed up. I hurt
my
foot.
A bone bruise, perhaps.
Thursday. I think it's a ligament thing. Hopefully not a stress fracture, but I was limping around at the game on, Wednesday night. So, it seems to have caught me too, that injury bug.
So, the Suns have hit the injury bug, as you said. This happened last year too. They had injuries. It's hard to put into context how much of their failure is due to injuries and all that kind of stuff. You can obviously say that if they were completely healthy all year and they had everyone play 82 games, they probably would have 24 or 25 wins right now, to say the least. But that is not the case. Devin Booker has been ruled out the rest of the season. It seemed like TJ Warren and Tyler Johnson and DeAndre Ayton were all three headed towards that type of outlook. But for now, Tyler Johnson is the only one. How did they describe this? It was a procedure done on his right knee.
Arthroscopic. So that's just a knee scope cleaning it up, I think. So I don't think it's a huge deal. It just seems like it's one of those things where they were seeing if he could come back. And then at this point, when everyone else is hurt, it's like there's no point in you coming back. Go get that fixed. Be ready for next year is how I took it. So
we can officially cross off Booker, Johnson, and Oubre for the rest of the season. That is three games. TJ Warren is going to miss his 31st game in a row, but they are not willing to rule him out yet, which I don't understand. It is perplexing, and everyone's conspiracy theories are just growing stronger by the minute that they don't rule him out the rest of the season. My favorite TJ Warren stat that I tweeted out today is that just my favorite TJ Warren stat. Not like I tweeted out like six TJ Warren stats today. That was my favorite
Got
one.
Got really pumped today about it.
He's started only 36 games this year, and that's fourth on the team.
So, one, the interesting thing about TJ is Bobby Marks has the contract details and he put out a story with bonuses and stuff. One of them was Devin Booker. He would get paid a lot more if he makes an all-NBA team. That could theoretically still happen if you think that NBA writers will actually go against all these narratives about Devin Booker being bad. But the other thing was TJ Warren's 5 3-point attempts, just attempts away from hitting like a $200,000 roster, like a bonus, not roster bonus, just a bonus. That was, I think he had to shoot above 37% and take 200 some amount of threes.
He's like five attempts away from qualifying for the bonus or something. That's what people were saying.
You would think the Suns would just be like, no, we'll just give you that because you blew that whole thing out of the water. And if you were healthy, we would have made the attempts part. But that's a cool little tweak in his contract, because very clearly he was like, I'm gonna work on this, whether it's the contract or because Igor actually told him like you would be helpful to this team if you took threes, and he was like, okay.
Can I say that it's a leap of faith in the Suns to pay him that money when they didn't have a 15th player on their roster until they signed Jimmer for debt? Moving on.
Ooh, the Suns, I'm looking...
So those guys are... DeAndre Ayton had an ankle sprain, and it just makes absolutely no sense for him to play the rest of the year because he is of vital importance. And if he's fine and good to go, I guess, for the last games on Tuesday, he will... I guess he'll play, and that'll be fine. But he's the most likely to play out of all these guys, I think. TJ, it seems obvious that he's not going to play anymore. I guess I could be proven wrong. But what I'm getting to is all those guys have already been ruled out for tomorrow's game, which is against the... I should know this because I'm covering the game.
Pelicans, right?
They play the Pelicans, yeah. I knew that. I'm just playing dumb.
I'm actually looking at the man games loss, and the Suns are actually pretty low on the list because everyone just got hurt at the very end of the year.
Yeah.
which is kind of weird to think about, but
Book was the worst, or Warren actually was the worst, obviously, but Book was kind of in there. But for the most part, it was just because they couldn't figure out who's playing where. Like, De'Anthony Melton and Elia Okobo have, a lot of guys have double-digit games started for the team, and they've had Kanan, Okobo, and Melton all get there. And then Tyler, I don't know if Tyler Johnson got there. I don't think he played.
He had 12 starts.
12 starts, okay. So they had four different point guards, quote-unquote, yeah, point guards. Start double-digit games, which tells you, which is another fun stat to throw around to people who don't think Devin Booker is good yet. And that's, so all those guys are out. Rashawn Holmes is probable because of another ankle sprain. I just sprained my ankle saying that, by the way. And it's making this season look really bleak, the last three games at least. And I think it was Brian Gibberman who tweeted out the other day that, like, the worst last month of the season is the NBA, hands down, no questions asked. And from this perspective, it certainly is, because these last three games are really dire. You were out there on, just to kind of talk about recent games that have happened, I guess, you were there Wednesday, which is when Booker sprained his ankle, and it was a weird, it was weird timing, because the Suns were up probably still 10 by that point, but they started out up 18-4 or something against the Jazz. So the crowd immediately got into it. You noted the crowd in your recap that it was a good
heavy
crowd.
Heavy Jazz thing going on there, but it was still a good Suns crowd, and it was a super weird game because the Suns actually came out. They were really crisp, looked good, playing defense. Jazz were like not playing well, and they were missing like five guys themselves, rotation guys. But yeah, when Booker went down, the Suns kind of didn't really blink for being that team where Elia Okobo led them in scoring with 15 points in only like 20 some minutes. So it's what you would have hoped. Like, I was ready to just be like, all the bad things are happening right now, which is true, because a whole starting lineup is hurt essentially right now after Booker. And there were still good things somehow to come out of it, in that if we go all the way back to the first game of the year, it was, this team is playing basketball. This looks like a basketball team. They're running plays and stuff. They look like they know what they're doing. They look well coached. I saw a well coached team last night. It just wasn't a very good one. And Joel Ingles went off, and that was that. So good luck watching the Jimmer show though. Next three games.
God, we're not going there.
He tried to post up Niang, who's like, what, 6'7", maybe 220, 230 pounds. He literally tried to take him in the post, and he traveled, and he's like, dude, what were you thinking?
Hopefully, Okobo is going to do what he did in that game. He scored 15, which isn't even much to get excited about. But with that being said, it is for him because of the season that he's had and the lack of, I don't even think it's lack of confidence. It's just lack of understanding. I've said it since November. I just don't think he understands how good he is.
It's the same thing as Ayton to some degree. It's like these guys are, I don't know if it's stuff moves fast, or they're just not like realizing, dude, you got moves, you have the skill set to do certain things, and they're just trying to not mess up, or something to that degree.
Yeah, Tony Jones tweeted about Okobo, and I tweeted back at him like, he's going to be great if he realizes how good he is. And then he tweeted like, he's got a floater package already. Like, they better hold on to him. And that's something, Tony's really smart, and that's something where it's, you don't find rookie point guards who already have a floater package, let alone like a functional floater already. And like, Okobo's just got so much offensive skill. It's pretty ridiculous. And the Clippers game on the road from the 10th or 15th game of the season was the first one where I was like, oh, he's got this if he just finds the right mindset about it.
Yeah, he has, his personality is, he's like really endearing to like Booker. Like, we talk about at practices, Booker and him will always play one-on-one, and Booker just tears into him, just like goes into the post and destroys him. And Ellie's like, ha ha, that was fun. It's like, Book's clearly trying to like just toughen him up, but he's so,
he talks to him,
youthful. Yeah.
Yeah. He talks to him, but he talks to him like any other player would. It's hard to read anything into I can't read into how much he's talking because I don't know who's talking when.
Yeah, it's like, Ellie, you know, don't enjoy your getting killed. And I don't know.
It's like when Dwayne tweeted that Booker asked to get like Ellie in the game or something when D'Anthony screwed up. And it's like, that's kind of stuff actually happens a lot more than you think. It's just we don't see it and we don't have it put out there. Essentially, it's not in situations like that where it's a dead quiet arena and Dwayne sitting there can just hear it right behind Igor. I think Ellie's the obvious guy to look at in the last three games, but it's just, I really want to hope that they can avoid. Is it too much to ask for them to just lose by 25 in a normal way and not in Jimmer clown show semantics?
Sounds like it's too much to ask. Sorry to ruin. Do you want to see Mikal Josh do more? Mikal kind of struggled to.
Did you ask if I want to see Josh do more?
No. I did, but I didn't mean it that way.
Oh, no. We're off the rails.
He played his, like, arguably his best game, and then everyone's super excited, and I was just, negative me over here is like, just wait until the next game. Then sure enough, once Book goes down, he starts taking every shot, and it's like, well, now he has an excuse to do all the bad things.
It was on my timeline the other day. I might have been Sam Cooper from the Timeline Podcast. I can't remember who it was, but it was essentially that he's shooting like 40% from three, but he's shooting like 41% at the rim or something.
I've never seen someone miss so many layups.
What happened to him, man?
I don't know.
I've given up trying to figure out the whole young guy has it alpha dog thing. We can claim Zion is going to come in here and change everything. This is my anti-Zion take. Here we go.
Okay.
Strap in. I'm kidding. But we can claim like Zion's going to come in here and just with the way he plays and competes and the type of person he is, he's going to change everything. And we just don't know until they get here.
Right.
Just have no idea. Josh Jackson forgot how to dunk this season.
Apparently, that was a thing in college too. Like,
was it
someone like when he was a rookie last year? Scott Chazen, who was a Suns fan, he covers KU now. Who watched him at Kansas a lot was like, oh yeah, he just misses dunks a lot. That's his thing, and it was like. Huh, I'd never thought of that. And then it's
wasn't
like, sure
rookie,
enough.
Wasn't his rookie year.
It might have been after he was drafted.
Yeah.
Something where that was brought up to me. And then ever since, I've been like, yep, that's true. I see it.
The headbutting the desk type of moments where you can see him sprinting full speed and he's about to pass the three-point line and you see the guy under the key and you're like, don't run into him, don't run into him, don't run into him. Runs into him, and it's like when he gets caught in the air, it's like, don't pass the ball, don't pass the ball, and he passes the ball and throws it right to someone else or whatever, or someone else on the other team. It's so many of those decisions from him constantly that just have absolutely no faith in his outcome anymore. And I'm not trying to devalue the argument that it's the situation that is causing this. We're not at all.
Yeah.
But it's just got to take it for what it is right now. And
if you put him
is.
And he's the bench role, like if he's the seventh or eighth man coming off the bench, he might figure it out, I think. But right now, it's if you. Do you watch It's Sunny in Philadelphia?
Somehow, no.
All right.
I watch a lot of TV shows.
People Charlie in that this, but, has a thing where he. An episode, at least, where he's like the wild card, and he calls himself the wild card, and he just cuts their brakes when they're in a van, and then he jumps out. That's Josh Jackson. He's the wild card.
The wild card.
Who cuts your brakes and jumps out of the car when he screams it and screams wild card. That's Josh Jackson.
People had a lot of fun getting to know Matt Moore on one night on Twitter. Matt is a special part of NBA Twitter in my mind, and I say that with like in the highest way possible, but he was basically saying he was not, he was bringing the attention to the Suns and the Booker thing and like, these games actually don't really matter type of deal. And it's like fans getting upset that he's saying that 50 plus points doesn't matter. And he's saying like, oh no, like the 12 point games don't matter too.
Yeah.
When he shoots 1 of 17, those games don't matter too, because none of these games actually matter. And that's what he was saying. And to bring that all the way back to what we were just talking about, it's the example I provided to him was that you can tell when this situation, you can read through this situation sometimes to actually like analyze things. I think that's, that was the black pit he was going down that I just can't subscribe to, is that none of these games matter and we can't read anything into them. And
yeah,
and that's not true. But some, and Elfrid Payton was the example I gave to him. It was like, I wrote a thing 3 games in where I was like, everyone relax, everyone calm down, look at all these things he's doing, which are good, and I like pointed him out, like, this is a good play, this is a good play and stuff, but look at these, and relax, hold on. Josh is the inverse, where it's like, maybe he just needs to get out. Maybe he just needs to get out, and then he'll be fine, because I think everyone subscribes to that being a possibility. No one was saying, like, Marquise, I can't say no one, because someone is always saying that, like, Marquise, Chris, or Drogba just needs to get out of here, and they're going to be good. And there's more people making that noise for Drogba this year. But Josh is one where it's like a lot of it, that's like the consensus around him, is that like if another team got a hold of him, the question is if another team got a hold of him now, or if a team is like under the mindset of, oh, I wish we could have had him when we drafted him, do they think he's too far gone now?
I just, yeah, it's, he's a weird player in that regard because he has something to him. You just can't describe what that something is. It's competitiveness and it's flashes where he really does impact an entire game. But there's so many times when he impacts it so negatively, it's just like, okay, well, if you got rid of this out of your game, then you would be solid. Like, and getting something out of your game when it's basically a mindset or decision making, I think you can argue is more than saying, oh, Marquise Chris has these untapped talents. So it's just a weird, he's a weird guy to evaluate that way.
He is. We'll kind of wrap there on just talking about the team as a whole and going forward.
Hey, they're canceling practice, they're canceling shoot arounds. I showed up.
Hey, for someone who has to drive 40 minutes to shoot around in the morning, drive back home, and then drive back and drive back home, it's fine by me if we want to cancel shoot around every now and then, people. Feel free. I ain't complaining. No complaints from Kel over here.
Enjoy it. Enjoy it.
You were just like, yeah, man, yeah, good for you, I guess. So the most significant thing that happened in yesterday's game of Devin Booker getting hurt was that the Suns lost, meaning that with a Bulls win earlier in the day, they clinched a 14% chance at Zion Williamson, which is what everyone is saying because he is the consensus number one pick. This is like, well, the LeBron year or the, you know, it wasn't like last year, it wasn't like the Suns won DeAndre Ayton. There were some people saying that earlier, but the Suns won the number one pick. And this is a year where it's like they won. You have a 14% chance at Zion Williamson. It's not.
Also, last year they could have gotten the number two pick, and I would have been like, yeah, that's good.
They could have. This is the point in the situation now where I think everyone, as we get closer and closer to the day, is going to start to realize how royally effed this lottery reform is. And I don't mean that in a negative way that I hate it, just that it is completely unpredictable with the way the odds have changed. And what I mean by that is, the Suns are clinched in a top three spot right now. If they have one less win than the Cavs, so if both teams lose out, which is very possible, or if the Suns don't win another game this year, they will have the second best odds. That sounds nice and everything compared to the third odds, but actually, the odds for each team in the top three, so that's currently the Knicks, the Suns, and the Cavs, they each have the same exact odds for the number one pick, the number two pick, and the number three pick, and the number four pick. Those do not change amongst 1, 2, and 3. So the Knicks have a 12% chance, a 12.7% chance, 13.4, and 14% chance at 4-1, respectively. So do the Suns, and so do the Cavs. What changes is each team is able to now fall another spot. So the Suns go from a situation where they can fall as far as sixth to potentially seventh if they move down one spot to third.
Yeah.
But 1-4 doesn't really change.
Yeah.
And we talk about, well, the cut from 25% at the top to 14 is what we've all talked about and what was so drastic about this. But here's the crazy thing is the Hawks currently sit in fifth, and they only have a 3.5% chance less at the number one pick than the Knicks, the Suns, and the Cavs. And if you even go down to Dallas in seventh, they have an 8.2% chance of the number one pick. New York is at 14 at the top, and so are the other teams, which is really, yes, it's a difference, but compared to the other year, I'm going to look while I swing it over to you, just the change in that. But that's the most drastic change to me. I think maybe we won't see a team fall four or five spots. Like, I think that's going to be a rarity. But we are going to see, it's almost a lock, it feels like, that two out of three. It felt like every year that at least it was a rarity if we didn't see two of the top three stick. Like, there was always that one team that would leap up, like Portland one year, or Cleveland for Kyrie, I believe, with the Clippers pick. Was another example of that. But most of the time we see that one team. I believe it was the Kings last year, if I remember correctly. They were the team that jumped up. But most of the time we see two teams stick. I think we're going to be lucky to see one team stick. It could be Atlanta, Chicago, New Orleans. That could be the top three. Like, it would not surprise me at all if it was amongst that. What do you think? I don't think there's a way to rationally talk about this from our perspective. So what do you think the whole front office perspective is in terms of dealing with this? Like, how do you deal with this in terms of your planning? Because if the Suns actually want to trade this pick, that's how they're... If they are in the Kellen Olsen camp, which is if you don't get the number one pick, you should be looking to trade it for someone pretty good in the NBA right now. How do you actually go about that when you could go from 2-6? In a draft like this, where 2-6 is a huge, huge drop, because I think we'll talk about this in a second, but I think there's a huge drop at 4, in my opinion. Huge drop at 1.
Yeah.
Humongous drop at 4.
So that would be Zion, Ja, RJ, Culver in some order. Zion's at top.
So we don't know if the NBA feels that way about Culver, by the way, but I think we'll get there.
Like him.
I think we'll get there, yeah.
So, so let's look at the best case scenario at 2, say 2 or 3. Like, you fall into that slot. You get RJ or you get Ja. As far as trading, that's who's going to be there. That's who guys will want to trade for. To me, that's like, you can get a rotation player for them, maybe. Like, rebuilding team. But when you fall to 4, even if you say Culver, who I think upside wise, he's behind Ja and RJ. Like, you might disagree with that. I think he's going to be a good player, could be a starting caliber player. But as far as guy who could be a potential all-star, I'm not sure he's that. When you hit 5-6, which you can read off the odds, the Suns are likely to fall to one of those spots, right? What's the most likely spot? At 2 right now.
The most likely spot is 5th.
Yeah, so if you fall to 5th, that's after that second tier of those three guys. What does DeAndre Hunter get you, basically? That's what you're going to ask. Yeah. And in a trade, I don't think that's much. That's why this is so scary. And from a planning perspective, they can't really do anything. They can shut all these guys down that are banged up and legitimately so right now, but they're basically going to be like biting their fingernails, twiddling their thumbs, and really hoping that this lottery pans out, because I mean, that's the whole point of it, right? It's to make you not dictate very well where you're going to land. And from just looking at the numbers over and over and looking at this draft class and considering where these tiers are, it's going to work, I think, for this draft at least. And it's going to change if next year's draft is 6 players deep or 8 players deep. But this first year, it's bad news for them. That said, of course, maybe they just get lucky.
So to what I was talking about earlier, first of all, I laughed because I looked up draft lottery odds 2018 and Alec Peters was the picture for them for the story.
Why?
Which is just beautiful for the Suns because he had that huge game against Dallas in the last game of the year.
Oh.
And he became a tanking, not meme maybe, wow. But I don't really know. So this is the difference I was talking about. The Suns last year, they were number one. They had a 64% chance at a top three pick. And that's not the number to focus on here. The number to focus on is the Magic in fifth. They had a 29% chance at a top three pick. So there is a 35% difference between those two teams in terms of their odds to get a top three pick. The difference now is not even, there's not even a 35% chance at all. Really, like the I believe New York has like a 40, I think it's like 40 or something like that. So 41, and then the Hawks are right around 32. So there's like an 8% difference really between
whether
them.
You're top three.
Whether you're top three or
and
not.
And the Suns, you said, have the same odds, right, as the Knicks.
Yeah. And okay. So it adds up to, let me see, that's 26. So 41.1%, if my math in my head is right. 41.1% for a top three pick for those three teams. And then Atlanta is at 31.5%. So it's less than a 10% difference between 1, 2, and 3 and 5 in terms of their odds to stick in the top 3, whereas before there was a 35% difference, which is humongous. So
That's a good way to frame it.
Yeah, it's a way to frame it just to show that this is going to get weird and these teams are going to not go well. Like, we can make our Knicks jokes all about Zion and how they're going to get Zion because it's New York and all that stuff. And maybe they do, but I don't think any... I think it's going to be really random. It would be very, very...
The math says it will be.
Wouldn't it be hilarious if it just stuck?
If it just stuck, then there's going to be conspiracy theorists out there.
Oh, man. If it just sticks the whole way, like the Suns are 2, the Cavs are 3, like the whole way down, that would just be hilarious. We were talking earlier about how we don't like picking outside the top 4 in this one. I especially do not. I tweeted out the very rough draft of my quote-unquote top 30, which will take word form on ArizonaSports.com sometime after the tournament, but I feel like there is obviously a huge gap between Zion and everyone else in this class, including Ja Morant, and then I think there is a sizable gap between Morant, Culver, and RJ Barrett compared to everyone else in this class. I think Cam Reddish has just been too inconsistent the rest of the year. I have a lot of faith in his skills and what they can potentially be, but at a certain point, you got to produce, my man, to be up there with those guys. And he just, especially in the tournament was the thing, and then he dealt with an injury or whatever that was. It seemed a little sketchier than just an injury, but we'll never know until...
He's back. He's fine, apparently. Yeah,
apparently he's back and fine, but still look like the same guy out there that has just a really long way to go in terms of reading the floor as like a ball handler and everything and just making decisions, which is sketchy considering his outlook. DeAndre Hunter was another guy, but go ahead.
I will just say that I do this every year, but I'm like, the spacing and the way college offenses are constructed do not help guys like RJ Barrett. They don't help guys like DeAndre Ayton. They don't help pure point guards, and they definitely don't help Cam Reddish when I think he's playing good team ball. Like, he's just not forcing the issue, which I think if you threw him on a team, like throw him on Arizona or something this year, for an example, like if someone told him to shoot a lot, I think he would look a lot better. But yeah.
So Reddish is a guy to me that's just, I think at a certain point you have to cut him off. And DeAndre Hunter is the same for me. Same thing where I'm going to read as much into the tournament as I want. And I read a fair bit into it, and you've tweeted a few times. It's like, okay, if DeAndre Hunter is a top 5 pick, he should probably take over this game right now. And yes, Virginia does Virginia things, and it's hard for him to do that. But there are certain elements of his game where you watch him and you find yourself, I find myself buying more into the upside than actually what is there at the moment.
Yeah.
And it's a lot more of upside than what's
there at
the
moment
for his scoring.
Why am I blanking on this?
Oh, they...
He got cooked by a point guard.
Not Gonzaga.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Number one seed, but... they play Auburn in the Final Four, but they played Purdue.
Carson Edwards. Oh, yeah. It was Carson Edwards. He cooked him.
Yeah.
And also, he's not rebounding. He's not really... Yeah, it's like, that's something that you can do.
What's your RJ Barrett take? You kind of
I've been jumping around with him, man. I think he has a lot of upside. It's just, you got to teach him to be a good decision maker. I don't really know much about him as a person or know exactly like if he's the type of dude who could just be coached, who wants to be in the film room, that kind of stuff. But he has all the skills and like size and athleticism is there. He projects like he could play point to small forward. It's just decision making, man. Bad shots and reading defenses. But again, it's hard to tell.
It's an interesting decision to try and when you try and interpret how he's played in the tournament, because in the tournament he has been moving the ball a lot and has just made simple passes to keep the offense flowing. He's been being a point guard essentially for them a lot. Trey Jones just out of that thing. But when push came to shove and it was time to win the game, he turned on the tunnel vision stuff a whole lot, and it was back to that concerning stuff. So are you encouraged by him being the simple pass and also the complex passes that he had to get those assist numbers, or are you more distressed by it because at the end of the day, if the game is on the line, he is still going to be old RJ Barrett tunnel vision guy?
Yeah.
And I land more towards, because he's so young, I'm just more towards the former than the latter. I don't think he is going to be... He's an interesting situation guy, too, because if he lands in a team where he's asked to be the guy right away, you're not going to get the right version of RJ Barrett.
Mm-hmm.
But if he lands on a situation like Phoenix, and this is where I'm kind of saying, like, maybe it's not so bad for him to land here. You think him and Booker are so similar, which is what I've said a lot. But at the same time, if you put him in a situation where he is the third, fourth, fifth option on offense, and you ask him to do more simple things, I think that's where you actually get the most out of him. And that sounds like the best situation for any guy, but for him specifically to get out of his bad habits.
Igor system, yeah.
And defer a lot more. Just defer a lot more to if TJ Warren's still here, if Josh Jackson's still here, even Mikal Bridges. Like, defer to those guys. And, of course, like, that's the argument then. Like, is he a good defender? Is he a good shooter? All that kind of stuff. And I think that doesn't really matter as long as his skill set comes together enough. But it needs to in a certain way. And Atlanta's another one where it's like, if he's going to play second fiddle to Trae Young, that would be pretty great. I'd sign up for that.
Yeah.
But if he goes to Memphis and is like the number one ball handler for them in the post Mike Conley era, or if he goes to Chicago where it's that assortment of guys, maybe that's just enough guys to make him defer. Cleveland, like him and Colin Sexton. Oh no. New York is oh no again, because he's going to be the number one ball handler there probably. But yeah, there are certain teams like Atlanta is one I mentioned again. And I think Phoenix is kind of in there as well with him. So that's my take on him.
Hey, that's good that we actually have the Suns being a good situation for a player who has flaws to land in. We've made progress this year, I guess, after all.
What game was I at? I was at, think it might have been Washington, where you just see the lineup they're putting out there and just look at their roster and it's like, it could always be worse, guys. It could, somehow the Suns have not, it feels like this is the worst situation possible, but it could always be worse. They have a lot going for them despite how things have gone recently.
We can talk about the Cavs game. The Cavs game was...
Oh my gosh.
They have two former Suns there who are who we thought they were. And
they
went poorly.
It was like a tick or like a flea was like crawling on the Suns, and every time the Cavs got within 5 or 7, the Suns just like flicked them away and like got the lead back up to 15 like instantly.
Who did Brandon Knight have a thing with in that game?
Josh dunked on him.
Oh yeah.
No, Josh blocked him and then
Oh, that was a bad Josh memory.
Said the stuff. Oh, that was a good Josh memory. That's fine. He can talk his talk to Brandon Knight.
Don't talk your talk to Brandon Knight when you're beating up on the Cavs. Like,
oh, yeah. I mean, there's that, too. I do remember my dad like texting me after that and being like, I hate this guy. Trade him. Get rid of him. It's a very like anti-dad move to taunt when you're on a really bad team.
Was that your dad or was that me? Or
dad's
you confused if we're the same person? Because I think I did that to you, too.
Everyone says
all
that.
All right.
Oh, man.
I think we should throw this in there. Former Suns executive, former Cavs GM David Griffin apparently interviewed with the Pelicans or was planning to. I don't even remember. But the whole point was Mark Stein tweeted it. He called us the Desert Denizens. The Suns should at least...
Can they even get him in?
I think he said go to him with a blank check.
Yeah.
And at least see what he says.
Yeah. Please.
And then I think it was Dan LeRoux was like, well, he probably doesn't want to work for the Suns because of their owner. And then Mark Stein was like, at least run to first on the ground out. I don't know what he said.
You know who wants to work for that owner?
Who?
Kevin McHale. You know who wants to be Kevin McHale's coach? Jason Kidd.
So I'm walking through.
Can always get worse, people. I said it a couple minutes ago. Just come back to it. Believe me, it can always get worse.
You want to end on that? You good?
They have the talent. Oh, you're writing a thing on the GM dealio.
Yeah.
What came of that?
Not much, other than David Griffin's probably the best exec out there. Mike Zarin from the Celtics. If another Celtics GM would dare do that after McDonough did. There's some names out there. The Timberwolves are going after Chauncey or thinking about it. So there's some weird like ex-players who are not that old who other teams are looking at. So the Suns aren't super crazy with the James Jones thing, but the McHale thing would be weird. Or Jim Paxson would be weird. Because the other candidates are either assistant GMs or guys who have like very strong reps or ex-players.
The most likely situation seems to be that they can't get the GM they want, which is Griffin or whoever, and they bring back Jones and then bring back someone either under him or with him, like McHale, like Paxson, who has a lot of experience, just to put someone experienced next to him so they can show stability because they're so stable.
I could see that because they've done it twice before.
And that's where you get concerned. I mean, we all know who's making the decisions at the end of the day, but... In certain situations where individuals are allowed to make their own decisions and do their jobs and not be overruled, is James Jones going to be making those decisions or is the other guy going to be making decisions because he has more experience? Like if someone's working under James Jones, is James Jones still going to be the guy making the decisions or is it going to go to the guy who actually has experience? And then at that point, what's the point of James Jones?
That's a good point. That's why the one in charge should be the one with experience. Right?
I don't want it to be that way because I don't want Kevin McHale being the one making the decisions. Oh, boy. All right. This is...
oh, boy.
We're always gonna find a way to the news here. We're going to. We're three games in, or three games left, but that up comes the GM search, up comes the lottery, up comes the draft, up comes Summer League, and then we finally have a couple... weeks to breathe, but not really.
Please don't fire the head coach and throw us off guard.
Just don't do it, please. Just don't do it for any reason. Not even to throw us off guard, just for any...
Well, it wouldn't be to spite us, but it would do that. It would throw us off. But I guess we should always be prepared for the worst here.
Should always, man. Just forever. If there are any soccer fans listening, I just started a podcast this week on ArizonaSports.com called the Uprising Podcast. It is about Phoenix Rising Football Club. And if you are saying, well, Kellen, I like soccer a lot, but I don't know what Phoenix Rising is, or I don't know what the USL is, or I've never been to a Rising game, or I've heard about the Rising but I haven't gone to a game, or I went to a game where I don't really know much, is what I'm trying to tell you, Kellen. Well, luckily for you, our podcast for the next 2 months or so, I think we're looking at least like a week, a month and a half, 2 months. We're going to just be doing Q&A style for a bit, having various guests on to kind of talk about where the club is right now, kind of more informative, so we can all do this together. Because I say we, because I attended my first Rising game match 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and I'm not very familiar with the team at all. I'm starting to watch all their games and get more acclimated, but you can join me on this journey as well, is what I'm saying, because I'm learning along with you guys. We had Sam Dora on our first episode. He's the vice president of the club. He gave a great gave us a great interview about just the atmosphere they've created there, their hopes for the MLS, and things like that that a lot of people are curious about. So, yeah, check that out if you want. If you don't, hey, perfectly fine by me. America is all about decisions, and to our international listeners out there, you guys have rights still, right? A little bit? You can do what you want.
Yeah, there are rights outside the United States, Kellen.
Is that how it works?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
I would recommend listening to Kellen.
You need to end it. I can't do this.
Okay. I would recommend going to a game too, because I have attended one game and it was fun. It was very unique and fun. And I'm like a pretty casual, I only watch soccer if it's Team USA guy. So I'm excited for you, buddy.
Thanks, man. Close it out. I can't do it.
As always, we love to hear your thoughts. Put some reviews up on the iWhatevers, the podcast itchers, the Spotify's.
All right, everyone. See you next week.